写完你孙啥的嘛，写完你孙，过年你来有你孙吧。你孙呢？他写完俺妈的有的香烟火，哦，大有的，大有买的。
嗯，
工作只有
成
年前，那是他有经常活动的。
哪里？
嗯，那你写完写嘛是二百九，写完二百第一个，哦，有一个，还有一年，那么多月，他都是真的有钱嘛了嘛？他有你们这的，他写完全部都有交了嘛？好了，他是那民大用的，你送我吧。嗯，我给我批评，我给我批评多了嘞。我把交保了，永寿公园明兰那边，那把写完过，写完全部都结了吧？啊，写的一些。没法说了说的民间金我不是说了说的民间金我不是那边他说的是俗话让你讲了后来俗的民间是那边俗的民间是那边俗的民间喜欢了俗的民间喜欢了我跟他说了俗嘛那是那边玩意哦俗的民间金我不俗了说的当你刚刚有把钱哦钱呢他当你提这样从他们家也没多少钱他们就不能再有买从他们家
里
啊记住了吧也记住想完这样说了说的明天就去嗯这些但是呢我把酒吧拉用手后面那么说的明天那么就你看说了说的明天就我不他你来给这酒吧了
嗯就这么
已经出
那里
明天就我不绝对没被打你看
嗯嗯
那我的民间缺乏了，那么在那说了说民间，我不，民间，说讲讲了，讲讲了，那么讲完了，说了说起民间，我不，那么，下面在那说起民间，我不，绝对没把的，那绝对没把的。这样子，他当嘛的，他你说了说民间，我不，说起民间，我不是进门听结果了哇？我那说起民间，我不是当门听结果，就他，然后他把他别个的先说呢。
苏了先生
他有嘛的嘛，那是，那是他
的，
说了说明显，说明显
是民党
性嘛，
那是，那是，
他说的明显，说的明显是民党性嘛，都说的我们说，那是，那是，他说的明显，那是，那是，他说的明显，那是，那是，他说的明显，那是，那是，那是，马上是熟悉的，但是就是一把他是一人进二了。
那是那是。
一人进二了。他过天气，马上卡住了，但是天气了不起，但是天气我们是这个样。
那是那是。
我他得了，他就进一把他。
那是。
我领钱的，他得承担不了。
那是。Okay, don't forget we're talking about two states of mind. Pick up from where we were this morning. We're talking about two states of mind posited in the Mind Only School. And we were concentrating on the differences between the objects of these two states of mind. One had a certain object, one had another object. How were the two objects characterized? The object of the first state of mind was described as something which doesn't exist ultimately and does exist nominally or deceptively. Something which doesn't exist substantially and something which does exist merely labeled. Okay, that was the description of the first object, the object of the first state of mind. Then we had a second state of mind which is described as, its object was described as something which is substantial, something which is not just labeled, something which is ultimate, does exist ultimately, something which does not simply exist as a labeled thing. Okay, that was the way those two objects were described, those two states of mind. Now Geshe-la wants to go into the actual wording for those two objects. Those two objects are not simply called, you know, something you can see, right? That's only part of the name for those objects. In each case, we have a little bit of extended phrasing in the Tibetan. The first one is called something you can see, comma, that thing which has the name of something you can see. Okay, something you can see, comma, that thing which has the name of something you can see. Geshe-la was thinking about this one. He was trying to think of, trying to imagine what the mind-only school is talking about when they talk about something you can see, comma, something which is just given the name of something you can see. Okay, and he was thinking about it. And he said, I think they're referring her, since they say that they are referring to something which is not substantial, but rather something only labeled. They must be talking here about the fact that visual objects are what you call visual objects. Okay? The fact that visual objects are what are called, quote, visual objects, is actually what we're talking about here. We're talking about a state of mind which is concentrating on the fact that visual objects are what are called visual objects, which is in itself a construct, a mental construct. Okay, so the object in the first case, because of that additional phrasing in the Tibetan, that thing which is given the name of visual object, etc., it must be talking about the very fact that this thing is what we call a, quote, visual object. So that's the object in the case of the first consciousness, the object being something which is not substantial, which is only a construct, something which does not exist ultimately, but rather exists only nominally. What is the object in the second case, therefore? Geshe-la points out that we have some extra wording here also. We are six lines from the bottom, and it says, it adds the expression, Lopo Judameva. Judameva means cannot be called. Okay? So here we have the object of the second state of mind is being called that thing which cannot be called simply something we call visual object. Okay? That thing which is beyond description as something we simply call visual object. Meaning, now we're talking about the real blue. Sukh nibadi ngumbu rang noa. Sukh nibadi. Nothing. Nani. Ming tam mayinke. Mayinke. Judume. Ming tam tu judume. Nothing. Nothing. And now he'll go into the meaning of the object of the second one. So he's finished the first one. He wants to point out that in the description of the second object, they've used the same phrasing with a small difference, four extra syllables, okay? Instead of saying that thing which is just called a visual object, now it says that thing which cannot be described as being just called a visual object, okay? Now he's going to go into more detail on what that means. If you take these words on face value, you know, if you take these descriptions of the two objects, of these two states of mind on face value, there seems to be a big problem here. You know, it seems to be, we can't conceptualize it very well. It's kind of hard to think about, and there's a doubt that could come into your mind whether this or not is something that the mind-only school wants to say. Okay, so is it something the mind-only school wants to say? And even if it is, it's kind of difficult to grasp. So he wants to talk more about it. Let's take an example. Now let's look around. Let's see. What are we going to take as an example? Let's pick on this thermos bottle. Okay. Let's pick on this thermos bottle. Now, don't forget that in the description of the object of the second state of mind, right, the second consciousness, this thermos bottle, or there's being described a thermos bottle which is beyond description, a thermos bottle which cannot be spoken of. Okay. And so in the mind-only school, he says, first of all, in the mind-only school, they're saying the thermos bottle that I'm pointing to is not the thermos bottle that the mind-only school is talking about when they say the thermos bottle which is beyond description. Okay. Now, what do they mean? That's still we're going to clarify. But what Geshe-la means to say is, if you're like walking around talking to normal people who have not studied Buddhist philosophy, they did not get into what the mind-only school means, just plain old guys, and you go up to them and say, hey, you know what? This thermos bottle is beyond description, you know? Or if you come up to them and say, by the way, this is not the thermos bottle which is beyond description, okay? That sounds like crazy talk. So, I mean, you got to clarify what they mean when they say this is or this isn't the thermos bottle which is beyond description.
Nothing.
When the mind only school says about this particular thermos bottle that we're pointing to right now, that this is not the thermos bottle which we can describe as indescribable, right? As beyond description. What do they mean when they say that? Where is the thermos bottle which is indescribable? Okay, it is inseparable from the consciousness which is perceiving it. Okay, there's a consciousness which is perceiving the thermos bottle, and there is a thermos bottle which is beyond description, and that thermos bottle which is beyond description has an inseparable relationship with the eye consciousness, the visual consciousness which is perceiving that thermos bottle. Okay. So they would say that in the mind only school, right? In the mind only school only, right? In the mind only school, this is not the real thermos bottle in a sense, okay? This is not the real thermos bottle that you're seeing when you're perceiving a thermos bottle. What you're really seeing is something which has an inseparable relationship with the visual consciousness, okay? So in the mind-only school, they talk about a thermos bottle which is not out there, okay, which is not down there on the ground, but one which is bears or enjoys an inseparable relationship with the eye consciousness, with the visual consciousness. So you have to get familiar with that idea that in the mind-only school, they're talking about a kind of thermos bottle that has that exists with that kind of relationship with the visual consciousness. So where is the thermos bottle that can't be described, right? Where does it lie? Where is it located? Okay, there is the collection of parts that we call the thermos bottle. And in the mind-only school, they say that that thermos bottle, which cannot be described, does exist within those parts. Okay, it does exist within that collection of parts. Why do we say that that particular thermos bottle is indescribable? It cannot easily be described accurately by people who have not yet seen emptiness directly. So, assuming that we were people who were had not yet reached the level of a person who's seen emptiness directly, and we look at that thermos bottle, there is an indescribable to us, which we cannot describe, thermos bottle there somewhere in its parts, according to the mind-only school. But there is something, you know, when you look down at the ground and you see this thing there, okay, this big chunk of thing, you see this hunk of thing there, you know, you look away, you look down, and you see this hunk of a thing there, right? You do see something. Right. So what are you actually seeing according to the mind-only school? You are seeing an appearance. You are seeing a something within your own mind, something appearing in your own mind. And you are focusing on that apparent object, okay, that appearance of something, and you are thinking that that is a thermos bottle. And that's actually the object as described for the first state of consciousness. Okay. So what you think is the thermos bottle when you open your eyes and you look at that hunk of thing there, that blob there, And you say, and your mind says thermos bottle, what you're actually focusing on is a he doesn't want to quite call it mental image, okay, but he wants to say you're focusing on the appearance in your mind of a thermos bottle, and that happens to be the object of the first state of consciousness as it was described, something insubstantial, something labeled only, something that didn't exist ultimately, okay. Generally speaking, there is a real thermos bottle there in the parts, in the collection of the parts of the thermos bottle. That particular thermos bottle for us is beyond description. At our level, we cannot describe it properly. But then there's another thing that appears to us. Because of our habit of seeing the thermos bottle and other objects as existing external to ourselves, okay? Remember that was in this school a kind of mistaken impression that you can get. Our habit of thinking of that blob out there as existing external to ourselves plants certain seeds, mental seeds within our mind, and those seeds make us see something which is called, Geshe-la wants to call it, the fact or the appearance that the thermos is what is called the thermos. Okay? The appearance that the thermos is what is receiving the name thermos. Okay? The idea or the concept that the thermos is what's getting the name thermos is actually what we're seeing. And we are not seeing the thermos. We're not seeing the real thermos. In this school, if somebody comes up to you and says, are you perceiving the real thermos? You have to say no. And so, well, what are you perceiving? And you're perceiving a thermos in the idea that the thermos is the thing called the thermos. Okay? So that's how you perceive the thermos. You're perceiving some kind of concept of the thermos rather than the thermos. And that's the way it is for us normal people who haven't seen emptiness directly yet. There is a real thermos out there based on the collection of the parts of the thermos in this mind-only school, but you're never seeing it. You're always seeing a concept of the thermos. And that is the object of the first state of mind described on page 54. So, to put it simply, in the mind-only school, given the mind-only school, we'd have to say that there are two thermoses in effect here. Okay, there are two thermoses. There's the thermos which can appear to us, okay, at our level. And that's the idea of the thermos, really. Okay, so in this school, that's the thermos that we are seeing. When you look at a thermos bottle, you can look at this blob, and you think you see a thermos. What you are really seeing is your concept of the thermos. That's one of the thermoses that is there. Then there's a second thermos there, which does not appear to you, which truly is existing there in the collection of parts of the thermos. So really, in the mind-only school, you'd have to say there are two thermoses going on here. There's the one that you think you see, and then there's the one that's there, at this level, at our level.
Mm-hmm.
Generally speaking, Geshe-la wanted to go off into the effect of certain diseases on your perception, okay? Mistakes of perception that are caused by certain other influences. And in Tibetan medicine, there are three basic elements that determine your health, the balance of these three elements. One is called wind, one is called bile, and one is called phlegm. And these three humors in Tibetan medicine are responsible, the balance of them or the imbalance of them is responsible for your health. It's said that in the case of a disease where you have too much of the wind humor or too much of the wind element, that you begin seeing white things as blue. And he said, does Western science say that? I said, no. And he said, well, let's go on to another one. Which one do they accept? I said, well, they accept the thing about bile, okay? So he said, oh, let's go to that one, okay? So in Tibetan scripture, it says that if the humor of bile becomes overly predominant in your body, then you begin to get like a jaundice condition. You know that your eyes turn yellow, the whites of your eyes turn yellow, hepatitis or jaundice, and then actually your perceptions start to change. So if you take a person who's got a really strong case of jaundice or a hepatitis, they start to see pure white colors, like a sheet of white paper. They start to see it tinted yellow slightly because of the predominance of bile element in their body. Okay, so Geshe-la says, you know, let's take that example. Let's take an example of a person like that. The actual piece of paper is white. What they think they're seeing, or the paper as it appears to them, is yellow. Okay. And there's two kinds of people that you could divide. You could say there'd be one kind of person who had a bad case of jaundice and knew that it was affecting their perceptions. And you could say there was another person who had a bad case of jaundice and wasn't aware that it was affecting their perceptions. So the guy who wasn't aware would swear that rectangle was yellow, right? He'd say, that's yellow, you know. He would not recognize the fact that it's appearing one way and there's another piece of paper out there that's white that he cannot see right now, okay? But if you take a person who knows he's got jaundice, a bad case of jaundice, and he knows the effect of a bad case of jaundice on him, he knows that there's a rectangle which is appearing to him as yellow, and he knows behind that there's another rectangle which is actually white, and so he's sensitive to the fact that there's an apparent object and there's another object behind it. So really there's two objects going, there's two pieces of paper going on, right? One yellow, appearing yellow, and one which is white. Same thing with a thermos bottle, okay? There's a thermos bottle going on, and there's the appearance of a thermos bottle going on. And in the mind-only school, you're focusing on the appearance of the thermos bottle and not on the thermos bottle. Okay. Generally speaking, you know, you might hear my example say, ah, come on, Geshe-la, that's different, you know. This guy's really sick, and he thinks he's seeing something yellow, but there's really no yellow there. And yeah, I can admit there's no yellow there, but we have to admit there is the appearance of yellow there, don't we? Okay? So, I mean, you can't say there's no object appearing yellow to him, or there's no appearance of yellowness to him. There is an appearance of yellowness to him. You know, does the piece of paper have yellowness from its own side? No. But it is appearing to him as yellow. So we have to admit that there is an object appearing yellow. There's an appearance of yellowness, and there's the object which is not yellow. So there really are two objects going on here. And you have to agree to that, okay? That they both do exist. A yellow appearance does exist, and a white piece of paper does exist. And Geshe-la's other example for something which is white, which I forgot to translate, is and in Tibetan in general is yogurt. Okay, yogurt is like always given as the example of a white thing. Okay, so he says, suppose a guy's got this bad jaundice, right? This bad hepatitis attack, and he's got a cup of yogurt that he's looking at, and he'll see it as yellow, right? He'll see some kind of, there'll be an appearance of yellowness to him, and there'll be some yogurt there which is white, right? And then if you come and ask me, well, when he eats the yogurt, is he eating white yogurt or yellow yogurt, okay? And the answer is, of course he's eating white yogurt, okay? What does he think he's eating, okay? I mean, if you go up to him and say, are you eating white yogurt or yellow yogurt? He'll say, I'm eating yellow yogurt, okay? But in reality, what he's eating is white yogurt, okay? So he doesn't recognize the fact that what he's eating is white yogurt, and in fact, he is eating white yogurt, but if you ask him what he's eating, he'll say yellow yogurt. It's a very similar case. And it's the same case with the thermos bottle, okay? We got, with the yogurt, we got a white yogurt which is sitting there in the bowl, and we got a yellow yogurt which is appearing to the guy, right? The appearance of a yellow yogurt, right? And the thermos is just the same. We have a thermos bottle as it is appearing to us, okay? And then we have the real thermos bottle behind it, okay? We have the, which is what's described as indescribable to us, okay? I mean, we can't grasp it right now, okay? There's this rough image or appearance of a thermos bottle to us, and then there's this more subtle thing which we can't see right now, okay, which is to us, to a normal person, beyond description, meaning we can't talk about it because we don't understand it. There's a thermos bottle out there existing in the parts of the thermos bottle, the collection of the parts of the thermos bottle, and then there's this much rougher image of a thermos bottle, which is what we normally see, and it's a very similar example of these two thermos bottles and these two yogurts, okay. You know, in actuality, we want this question of, you know, two levels of thermos bottle or something like that is discussed in great detail later on in the text, okay? We're not going to make it there, okay? So Geshe-la says on this class, okay, in this series of classes, so he says, I think it's very important that I talk about it. It is going to be a central point later for the Mind-Only School. They're going to have to be talking about this subject. We're not going to make it this time. So I thought it'd be nice if I gave you a little preview of what we're going to be talking about when we get to that. In the consequence group of the Middle Way School, right, Manimika Prasangika, you can say that rough thermos bottle that appears to you is the thermos bottle, okay? And that's all there is. You don't have to talk about some phantom thermos bottle, behind a thermos bottle that is beyond our description or beyond our ability to perceive it or something like that. In the middle way school, things are much simpler, you know. The rough image of the thermos bottle as you see it is the thermos bottle, okay? And there is no other thermos bottle laying behind it that's the real one that's beyond your ability to describe or to perceive, okay? In the middle way school, Prasangika, things are a lot easier. Rapidly. Yes. I forgot to translate one more thing about the middle way school. And therefore they can say that it's an outer object. Okay? And therefore they can say, simply they can say, you know, the rough one that appears to you is the thermos bottle, and that's why you can describe it as an external object. Okay, sorry. Now he says, by the way, when we were talking before about a version of the thermos bottle that was indivisibly related to the perception of the thermos bottle, the visual perception of the thermos bottle, which one do you think we were talking about? The rough one that you think you see there, or the subtle indescribable one? He says the subtle one, okay, the indescribable one, okay. It's that one which they would say is indivisibly related to the perception of the thermos bottle. Let me check it and make sure. He says that yang ka chu na ka ju de me pe da da ra pa se di nga ta nang cha la ye ken ki cha da di mi ki na ba she pa da ngo chi mayin ke mayin ke ta pa ye ko che chan dom me ke ta pa No, sir. Oh, boy. Okay. This is a clarification. The rough one which is appearing to you, the rough image of the thermos bottle is not, as I said correctly, okay, got it right, is not the one which is indivisibly related to your visual perception, okay? That one, the rough one, the image one, is among the categories of changing things and unchanging things. It's in the category of unchanging things. It's in the category of constructs, okay? And it could never have been indivisibly related to your, it is not indivisibly related to your visual consciousness. It's the other one, the one which is beyond description, the one which is a changing thing or a functional thing, the thermos bottle itself in a sense, which is the one which, according to the mind-only school, is indivisibly related to your visual consciousness. Okay? That's all. Okay. This is interesting, okay? You know, we've talked about dunshis before, mental images of things, okay? And he says, are we talking, when we talk about the rough appearance of the thermos bottle to us, are we talking about a dunshi? Are we talking about a mental image? He says, it sounds like a mental image, doesn't it? You know, the description of it is very similar to the general description of a mental image, but they are different things, okay? Don't forget here, we are dealing with a sense perception, okay? We are dealing with a visual perception of a thermos bottle. And the thing between us and the thermos bottle, this unchanging construct of the rough appearance of the thermos bottle to us, right, is relatively, he says, subtle to describe. You know, you don't like go around looking at thermos bottles and suddenly catching yourself, oh, I was looking at this construct, you know what I mean? So relatively speaking, it's kind of hard to catch. It's more subtle than what we call a mental image. Mental images, he says, do not relate to sense perceptions. When we talk about a mental image, we're talking about an image of the mind or an image of the imagination. So what would be an example of an image of the imagination? These are mental, right? These are not related to sense perceptions, okay? For example, there used to be four guys here in class who have taken off for other countries already, okay? But we can look at the spots where they were and we can imagine what they used to look like when they were sitting here, right? You say, oh, Winston was here, you know, Winston looked like that, you know? And you can get some kind of a mental image of Winston in your mind. That's relatively more gross, less subtle than this image. Okay, so the image that's related to sense perceptions is relatively subtle, difficult to catch yourself doing it, right? Difficult to catch yourself perceiving it as the image. And then you have this other thing, which is actually, in a sense, grosser, and you can easily catch yourself doing it. Say, you know, if I say, where's Winston? And you look over there, and in your mind you have this mental picture of Winston, you know, and you're thinking, oh, he's not here. You compare your mental picture to the empty space there, and you say, oh, he's not here, you know. That's relatively much more gross. Okay. When I start talking about the real thermos bottle, I don't want you guys to get confused, you know. Don't go around telling people in America, oh, Geshe-Tsu Drinchen says, and the minority school says there's no real thermos bottles, and don't go around and get a reputation as Buddhists who say that things that are that aren't, and things that do exist don't exist, or something like that. That's not what the minority school is saying. When we talk about real thermos bottle or something like that, we're just trying to describe how you perceive the thermos bottle. We're not like accusing thermos bottles of not existing or anything like that. So when we got down to the second state of mental state, right, state of mind, and we were describing its object, and we added that extra phrase. What was the extra phrase? Indescribable or beyond description. Now I've just been trying to clarify the meaning of that for you, because that is a big difference between this object and the object that came before. Here we got this expression, which is beyond description, and now I hope you can distinguish between the two objects. Don't forget that we were referring to the object of the first state of mind as being something that existed in labels, right? And we were and that didn't exist substantially. And then we were talking about the second state of mind, and we said about it, it does exist substantially, and it doesn't exist merely as labels, okay? And now Jetsun Kapa is, you know, kindly going to draw a distinction before us between what it means to exist through labels and what it means to exist substantially. So on that fourth line from the bottom on page 54, he begins his discussion of the difference between the two by giving you the two right there. Zetak meaning zeya, dantayu meaning substantial, and just something exists through labels. Okay, that discussion by Jetson Kapa, description of it, is going to go up to page 55, line 3. And to make his presentation, he's going to be quoting from the abbreviation of Arya Sangha, okay, from that text itself. I gave you a brief description yesterday of the difference between something existing substantially and existing merely through labels. And what we said was, when there's an object which has a nature, that in order to perceive that object, you must first perceive some other objects. You know, there must be some kind of prerequisite perceptions happen prior to perceiving that particular object. When you must perceive other parts of it, for example, before you perceive that particular object, before you can perceive that particular object, we call that object an object which exists only in labels. A labeled object, or an object that exists in labels. And then when we talk about an object which you can perceive all by itself in one moment, right? You just see it and that's it. Okay, you don't have to perceive some other things before you can perceive it. Then that kind of object we call existing substantially. That's called an object which exists substantially. So, as I told you yesterday, if we wanted to give an example of something that existed through labels, through that process of having to have one perception in order to have the perception of that object, we could posit a person. Didn't I say that yesterday? Right? Got it? Is it written down your notes there? Okay, gotta say something. Now, what's an example of something that exists substantially according to this school's version, right, of what it means to exist substantially? What is something that you don't have to have other perceptions in order to perceive it, right? We can take mental things themselves, okay? States of mind. You don't have to go through some gradual process of perceiving the parts of it or some other things before you can perceive it. You just perceive them right away. When you think of thoughts, when you think thoughts, they're there. You don't have to have perceptions of parts or something like that or any other perceptions prior to it. You just, all at once, you can have a thought. Okay, you can perceive states of mind that way. A perfect example of this, remember that this school accepts a state of mind called apperception, which is the awareness of your own perceptions, okay? The simultaneous awareness of your own perceptions. While you are seeing something, you are aware that you're seeing something at the same moment, which is not accepted by some, you know, other schools, but that's a long story. So that would be an example. What is the object in this case? It's the a visual perception, perceiving blue, right? And what is the subject in this case? It's apperception, or the ability of the mind to know itself simultaneously. It's the awareness of seeing the blue. And when seeing the blue, when you're aware of seeing blue, it's not like first you have to go check in with some other objects, you know, oh, I better go first check this and check this and check this. I have to perceive this first and then this and this and this. It's not like that. When you're aware that you are perceiving blue, it's just one big awareness all at once, okay? You're just immediately aware that you are seeing blue, okay? So your self-awareness that you are seeing blue, that blue which that self-awareness is aware of is an example of something that exists substantially, okay? Because to perceive that, you don't have to have a separate, checking process or prerequisites or anything like that. you are perceiving blue, for example, and then your awareness that you're perceiving blue just happens, and there are no stages involved or anything. That's a sign that that state of mind called visual consciousness of blue is itself something which in this school exists substantially.
Yep. You're saying that the blueness is not what we call that.
Not at all. Right, not at all. It's the state of mind. Remember we said mental things can be described as existing substantially. Yeah. Yeah. Line 5, page 55. There's a description there, a literal description of what it is to exist through labels, okay? Which is called Thagyu in Tibetan, right? And it says here, that thing which is not such that to perceive it, you need not depend on other things. The double negative, okay? Then it says, comma, that thing which, those things which to perceive them, you must perceive, you must depend on perceiving other things first. Well, that's what we mean to be existing in labels. And those are things that we say exist nominally. And I'm sorry, those are things that don't just exist nominally, okay? That's what it says here. Which exist through, and which exist by definition. Okay? Make sense? Kazakh, person. Person. Things which, hang on. That tayo yimbache. Taneki wangi mashape yimbache. Tope tatsa mayimba. We'll take a shortcut, he says, okay? Forget the wording of the text, okay? The point here is that the mind-only school is saying that something can exist by labels and yet still exist by definition. Okay? That's the big point here. Something can exist through labels. Exist nominally, I think it says here, okay? I'm sorry, not just exist label. We'll talk about that. But can exist by definition. Now, in the Madhyamika school, in the middle way school, these are totally, it's totally the opposite, right? It says everything exists through labels, okay? Nothing exists substantially, okay? And so to exist substantially, I'm sorry, to exist, and they would say that the existing through labels and existing by definition could never be true of the same object at the same time. These are contradictory qualities. You couldn't say that something was just a creation of your projections or existing through labels and at the same time say it existed by definition. In the middle way school, these two qualities are totally opposites. They could one thing could never be both. Okay, but in this school, interestingly, they're saying these things like a person exist through labels and simultaneously they exist by definition. Okay, and for them, that's no problem. In their school, it's no problem. Kansate kundana res? No. No way. No way. It exists. It exists. No. He says you are confusing existing in labels with constructs. You're existing. You're confusing Tāyū with Kuntā. Okay. You're confusing Tāyū, which means exist through labels, with Kuntā, which means construct. Okay. The kiri kan yore. Tāyū dan Kuntā ni hi ke condition. Nani? Nani? No, sir. Don't forget what makes the thing Tāyū. Don't forget what is required of a thing for us to call it existing through labels. All it means is that in order to perceive it, you must perceive other things first. And don't forget that's all that existing through labels means. It's a code word for those objects in the world which to perceive, we must as a prerequisite perceive something else first. No, sir. So did you get existing through labels down right? Tāyū. And got it down? Nothing yet. And the idea of construct is easy, okay? We talked about it many times. Something which does not exist from its own side through some unique way of being of its own, but rather is just a projection or just a creation of our mind, a construct of our mind. And then Geshe-la himself slipped between the two words, so no problem, okay? Tāyū and Kuntā, different things. Yeah. 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 We didn't say that if you were one, you were necessarily the other. All we said was that in the mind-only school, these are not contradictory qualities, meaning you can find at least one thing in the world which is both. Okay? Which is what? What both? Which exists as a label thing, meaning that to perceive it, you must perceive other things first, and which exists by definition. So although in this school they would posit an example of that there does exist such a thing which is both, and therefore those two qualities are not contradictory, we're not necessarily saying in this school that to be one is to automatically be the other, or that all of ones are all the other. We okay here? We okay here? Did we make the division? Okay. All right. So to summarize, in the mind-only school, you can be something which is existing through labels and still be something which exists by definition. In the middle-way school, once you are something that exists through labels, forget it! You could never be something that existed by definition. The mind always, the consequence group of the middle way school says, hey, everything that exists in the universe exists as something labeled. Okay? Nothing. 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 Okay. That's where I stumbled before, okay, because I was looking at the book and he says, now let's get to the book because the book has some extra stuff that we got to clear out, you know. Okay? The book says, by the way, Geshe-la notes that Jetsokabe is raising these issues to clarify our thinking about what it means to exist in labels and to clarify our thinking about what it means to exist by definition by saying that in the mind-only school, these two qualities are not contradictory. One thing can have both qualities. And there he's trying to help us understand what those two terms mean in the mind-only school. And then the mind-only school throws in one more thing. The mind-only school says, we have no problem with one object being simultaneously A, an object that exists through labels, okay, and B, an object which exists by definition, meaning it is not simply a projection. It is not simply a construct of the mind. So they throw in that extra, phrase there to describe what it is to exist by definition. So to repeat it, minority school says we don't have a problem with one thing existing through labels, yet still existing through definition, meaning for us, something which is not simply a nominal thing, something which is not simply a product of our imagination or a construct of our mind. In the text, it's line six on page 55, Tanya Giwangi Mashakpa, meaning not simply established by projection or by imagination, but rather something that exists by definition. Once you've come along, especially in the Buddhist debate, right, and said, hey, this quality is not contradictory to that quality, meaning there is at least one thing in the world which has both qualities, you better be ready to show what that thing is, right? Kushi nangi bacha, see your name. The book only says, you know, sorry, give me an example of one, you know, show me one thing that is both, exists through labels and still exists by definition, right? And then the book says, a mental seed of the foundation consciousness, kunshi bakcha, okay? A mental seed of the storehouse consciousness, okay? And then I was trying to clarify with Geshe-la, because this kind of words can be very greasy, you know, slippery. So I said, does it mean mental seed in the storehouse consciousness? Because all it says here is mental seed of the storehouse consciousness, right? Which can be read as storehouse consciousness mental seed or something like that. And he says, you know what, to make it easy, forget the genitive here. And let's say the mental seed which exists in the storehouse consciousness, or atop in English, or in is okay in English, okay? In Tibetan, Tengdu, okay? That mental seed which has been planted, how's that? In the storehouse consciousness. That is one object which is simultaneously something labeled and something which exists by definition, according to the mind-only school. Why do I like the phrasing the mental seed which exists in the foundation consciousness, okay? Why do I like to say mental seed? Why do we say here mental seed that exists in the foundation consciousness? Why is it important to phrase it that way? Hey, when I say to you something like the mental seed which is in the foundation consciousness, what do you think of first? Well, first you're like focusing on, let me see, let me look, it's like saying, oh, the cup is on the table. So first you got to go around and look at the table, right? And then you look at the table, and then you can locate the cup, right? So somebody says, the mental seed which is in the foundation consciousness. First you go looking for foundation consciousness, and then you go looking around in it, and you find and say, hey, there's a mental seed in the foundation consciousness. Now what has happened just now? You have had to focus on another object in order to get to the mental seed, right? First, a prerequisite perception, right? First you had to go looking for what foundation consciousness was, and you thought about foundation consciousness, and then you went looking for the thing that was in the foundation consciousness, and then you found the thing that was in the foundation consciousness. That's a sign that mental seed object existing through labels, because that's what existing through labels means, right? Okay, nothing. We're just trying to stick, by the way, to the wording of the book here. We could have posited our own chichen, our own example, right? What would that have been? Person. Okay. Huh. Why? What's a person? Oh, person exists only through labels. Because you have to perceive other things first to perceive that person. And it doesn't exist by definition. In this school. It does exist by definition. does. Yeah, exists by definition. That would have been an example we could have pulled out. We didn't pull out that example just because the book didn't pull out that example. The book pulled out the example of mental seed in the storehouse consciousness, in the foundation consciousness. Nothing more.
Mm-hmm. Not yet.
Geshe-la says to our school teacher, which is Chris, okay? He says, by the way, the rule of this class is that, you know, you might as well let you know, is if you feel like you got to go to the bathroom or any kind of uncomfortable, bathroom's right there behind the electricity, and just relax. He says, you know, let your hair down, you know, spread out if you have to spread out. You know, he wants you to be comfortable because that's the rules of his class, and since you... this is your first day, he wants you to be comfortable. So, you know, if you get the urge, then feel free to go. And, you know, be comfortable and spread out and just relax. And, you know, that's the rules of Geshe Law's class. Okay? you can be one of those people that goes to the bathroom and never comes back to the class, or you can be one of those people that goes to the bathroom and does come back to the class. Either way. Want to just check in with you and remind you that the expression existing two labels, tag yu, has no less than four different meanings in the mind-only school, okay? So just to warn you, okay, that the expression existing two labels has four distinct meanings in the mind-only school alone, and it has the other ones elsewhere, okay? And he says, when we talked about that first state of mind before, remember? The first state of mind on page 54, and we said that its object existed only through existed two labels. That dagya, that existing two labels, means exists only as a projection or a construct of the mind, okay? That dagya means something else, okay? That existing two labels in the mind-only school has a completely different connotation, meaning existing only as a construct of the mind or a projection of the mind, okay? And then when we get to this dagya down here on page 55, when we're talking about that one, we're talking about something which, in order to perceive it, you must first perceive other things, okay? Those are two different meanings of that expression, existing two labels, so far. did you... Did you think of some question in your mind just now?
When you said
that
before, I just taken
the
rough water cloth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, let me check. That day, Dumbo said the membership of Dumbo Digi, you did get the day you said the Chado, Loma Rabba, Shower Dire.
Nothing.
那是。The one that's described as, let me get this straight, the indescribable one, right, is substantial, exists substantially. And the one, the rough one that you think you see, the rough appearance of a thermos bottle, that is the one that's being described as existing in by labels alone. And hey, by the way, isn't the question you just had in your mind evidence that it's difficult for us to describe it? You see, we describe it as indescribable or difficult to describe it. So, hey, there's proof of it. He had a question about it. Okay. That's okay. That Judah member said, yeah, this indescribable was hard for you to describe, wasn't it? No, sir. Don't forget that we are restricting ourselves when we talk about indescribable to the mind-only school. It's only the mind-only school that starts to talk about this, you know, phantom, indescribable thermos bottle that you have to think about. In the middle-way school, what? Hey, the appearance of the thermos bottle is the thermos bottle, okay? I mean, that rough apparent thermos bottle is the thermos bottle, okay? But in this school, there's this thermos bottle behind the thermos bottle that we can't really find easily and like that. Don't forget that when we talk about two meanings of the expression dāyu, meaning existing through labels, right? We just had a statement in the book that said, hey, in the mind-only school, one object can be both existing through labels and existing by definition. There's no problem. These two qualities are not contradictory, right? But if you describe the meaning of existing through labels the first way, which is just a projection of the mind or just a construct of the mind, hey, then that and existing by definition are totally contradictory, okay? So be careful here. Be careful to divide them here, okay? The first, existing through labels in the first meaning and existing by definition in the mind-only school are totally at odds, totally contradictory. Existing through labels and existing by definition in the second sense of the first one's meaning, those two things are not contradictory. So don't get confused here, he says. Well, When you say this thing, when you say something that exists through label, through a labeling process or something like that, right? If you think about it, just from the wording of it, you know, something that exists through a labeling process or something like that, you could maybe even come up with things that didn't exist that could be described as something that was there through a labeling process, right? So although it's not a real thing that exists through a labeling process, you could think of it in terms as looking to exist through a labeling process. What's an example of that? The fact that any particular object is what is called that particular object, right? Does that fact exist by definition or not in the mind-only school? It does not exist by definition. Now pretend that it did exist by definition, okay? Pretend that there existed a fact that a thing is called itself that existed by definition, right? That would be something you'd have to make up with your mind because it doesn't really exist, okay? And in that sense, that also is an object of labels. In a certain sense, you could say that non-existent object, which happens to be what emptiness is empty of in this school, okay? That exists by labels also. So although it is not what we classically call those things which exist through labels, you could describe it as existing through a label, although it's not an existing thing, okay? I mean, in a certain sense, you could say, oh, that is a construct of my imagination, okay? That is something my mind is making up. And in that sense, you could say it exists through labels.
Is that the thing that
Yeah, that's the gakcha. That's the gakcha. In this school, the fact that something is what it's called doesn't exist by definition is what if that did exist by definition, it would be what emptiness is empty of. Nothing. Don't forget that the principle existing by labels that we're talking about is the one which means in order to perceive that object, you must first, as a prerequisite, have other perceptions of other things first. Okay, and that's the main meaning of existing by through labels. But on the other hand, even though that's the main meaning of existing by through labels, don't think that all the words, you know, all the things that are described as existing through labels all mean the same thing. Don't think that every time they use the word, the phrase, existing through labels, they're making this big mishmash or Irish stew of all these. You know, don't go trying to make all those phrases mean the same thing because they are not going to and they don't, okay? Although that's the main meaning, there are many other flavors of meaning to this phrase, and don't make the mistake of thinking that they all have to be the same or they're all going to be the same because they're not. Okay. Then the, let me see, 3, 6, 9 lines from the bottom, page 55. Jetsu Kapa makes another statement though, right? He says, although that particular dagyo, right, the one where you have to perceive something else first to perceive that thing, right, that particular flavor of a thing that exists through labels and the quality of existing by definition are not contradictory. One thing can be both. But, okay, here's the but. Line 9 for the bottom, it says, Mingdan tobe tobe tayo yina, meaning, if you're talking about existing through labels in the sense of being something that's just constructed by the mind, or something that's just a projection of the mind, well, then that is completely contradictory to existing by definition. Okay. That version of tagya, that flavor of tagya, that connotation of the phrase existing through labels is completely contradictory to existing through definition in this school. Okay? It's okay? Problem? No? Okay.
Listen.
Now we finally reached where we were last night, after a whole day, okay? Line 7 from the bottom, page 55, Josu Nipa means the second way of explaining what that means. What means? What it is to be exist ultimately, and what it means to exist deceptively, okay? Okay, then we finally got back to that part, okay? Now after all that, we are back to where we started out from, which is the second way of interpreting what it is to exist ultimately and what it is to exist deceptively. Remember, there was the first version of what it is to exist ultimately, and then the second version of what it is to exist ultimately. And then there was the first version of what it is to exist deceptively, and then there was the second version of what it is to exist deceptively. We finished these two. We still got to get to these two, okay? And I said, I taught you all that last night. I'm sure you remember. Now we're the second way of explaining the terms or the phrases to exist ultimately or to exist deceptively. For that, we're going to go to Maitreya's book called Distinguishing the Middle from the Extremes. Okay, distinguishing the difference between the middle and the extremes, Madhyanta Vibhanga. Okay, so in that book it says we can describe ultimate. First, it's going to talk about what it means when we say existing ultimately. What the ultimate part explains when we say existing ultimately. And then it says there are three kinds of ultimate. There's the ultimate object, there's the ultimate attainment, and there's the ultimate practice. Okay, so ultimate has three different meanings. What is the ultimate object? What is, and in Tibetan this is almost a pun, because then you have to say dun dun dampa, okay? Meaning the object of ultimate object, or something like that. You know, the word ultimate incorporates that word also. So it sounds kind of cool in Tibetan. Dun dun dampa means the ultimate object. That's emptiness itself, okay? Ultimate reality, okay? What is the ultimate attainment? This is, in this present context, we're talking about nirvana. Reaching the state of a foe destroyer, or reaching nirvana, is the ultimate attainment, okay? And then it says ultimate practice, meaning what is the ultimate practice? It is the perception of emptiness. Okay, it's the practice of perceiving emptiness. Okay, so you've got ultimate object being emptiness, ultimate goal being enemy destroyer or nirvana, and then the ultimate practice, which is perceiving emptiness. Okay, we have three meanings of the word ultimate here. It says Madhyanta Vibhanga. Okay, nothing. Gendi, you can know the way, you can do a Napchunga, you didn't want it, Sine. Then dumb numbers seem to do the way. Then dumb numbers seem to do. Then dumb. We got a little question about the quotation. It might be spelled wrong, but he's going to check it. In the meantime, I'll translate what he said, okay? So we've got three different kinds of ultimate described here. Ultimate object, ultimate goal, right, or ultimate achievement, and the ultimate practice, right? The book wants to... Jetsukapa in his gloss... is that Jetsukapa or a commentary? The commentary to it says, okay, the commentary to that book says, by the way, when we talk about the second sense of existing ultimately, we are talking about the first of the three. Okay? And Geshe-la wants to make very sure that you don't think that he's saying, or Jetsongkhapa is saying, that the second way of interpreting ultimate in the expression exist ultimately is all three of those. It's not. It's only the first of the three. Okay? So when we describe ultimate in the second sense of the word ultimate or existing ultimately, we're talking about only the first one. And in Tibetan, that's that one where you have the pun, right? The ultimate object. You can't describe it in English, okay? Dun dun dhamma means ultimate has the word dun in it, and object is the word dun here. So dun dun dhamma, where Geshe-la says, where we repeat in the Tibetan the word dun, okay? That's the one that we're talking about when we say the second interpretation of the meaning to exist ultimately, okay? And the book wants to be sure that you say that. Why do they call it the ultimate object? Because it is the object of the mind, the state of mind in which you perceive emptiness, okay? So that's why it's called emptiness. Rather than saying ultimate reality or something like that here, it says the ultimate object, meaning the ultimate object in the sense that this is the object of the ultimate state of mind, which is the direct perception of emptiness, okay? The direct perception of emptiness. So that's why it's called, in this case, the ultimate object. Ultimate object, meaning ultimate reality, is the meaning here of the word ultimate in the expression existing as ultimate in its second sense, in its second context, okay? So that's, he wants to make sure you understand that. No, sir. It is a printing error. Sixth line from the bottom, at the very last syllable of the line, it should be D-A-M, okay, dumb, and not dung. Listen. Not again. Lying. When they talk about the commentary to the distinguishing the middle from the extremes, okay? When they talk about the commentary, Geshe-la wants to point out that in this particular book, Chang'e Lekshin Nyingbo, The Essence of Eloquence on the Art of Interpretation, okay? Most often they'll be talking about Master Vasubandhu's commentary. Okay, so they won't identify the author all the time. They'll just say, in the commentary too, distinguishing the middle from the extremes, then you have to think, oh, Master Vasubandhu's commentary. And then later he'll say, in the explanation, Jiaoxie, of the dividing the middle from the extremes, when you hear that, you have to think, oh, that's the one by Master Sthiramanti, okay, Lodutembo, okay? So when you hear those two code words, you know, for the most part, they're going to refer to those two authors. And he says, that's not true in general. I'm not saying in general, every time you come across the expression, the commentary to dividing the middle from the extremes, that it's talking about this particular commentary. But in this particular book by Jetsun Kapa, when he talks about the commentary, he's talking about Master Vasubandhu's. When he talks about the explanation, he's talking about Master Sthiramanti's. Okay. Although Sthiramanti's explanation isn't mentioned here, it comes a lot later. Oh, this is going to be hard in English, okay? We're on the fourth line from the bottom on page 55. So the commentary, right? Now we know who is, right? Master Vasubandhu's commentary to the text by Maitreya, really, written down by Master Sangha, right? It says, by the way, when we talk about ultimate here, in the expression existing as ultimate or existing ultimately, we are talking about the first one, okay? The first one was as an object, okay? And in Tibetan, don't forget that it means, it breaks down to object, object, ultimate, right? Object, object, highest. The word ultimate in Tibetan is composed of two parts, dun, dam. Okay, dun means meaning or object, and dam means highest. Okay, so dun, dam, highest meaning is the Tibetan word for ultimate. So there's another meaning of dun that means object. Okay, so now there's a pun in Tibetan, it's dun, dun, dam, right? Which means the ultimate object, meaning that object of highest meaning, okay? That object of highest meaning. Now he's going to play with the Tibetan words, okay? Jetsun Kapa is going to play with the Tibetan words. He's saying, what are we talking about when we talk about the meaning of highest meaning, or the object of highest meaning, right? Ultimate object? The object of highest meaning refers to emptiness itself. Okay? Why do we call it the object of highest meaning? What does ultimate mean? What does highest meaning mean? Well, the highest state of mind in the world is the direct perception of emptiness. Okay? That's the highest state of mind in the world. And so that's the meaning of the word highest. Okay? Here it says yeshe, meaning wisdom. And Geshe-la points out that here the word wisdom means path, okay? The highest path in the world. And don't forget that path in Buddhism means state of mind or spiritual realization. Okay? So the highest spiritual realization in the world is the direct perception of emptiness. And the dern here means the object of that state of mind. Okay? So you can describe the word ultimate as meaning the object of the highest state of mind. Object, highest. Okay? Highest meaning. And in Tibetan, that's a pun. Okay? So that dern, which is the object of the Dampa state of mind, okay, is Dundampa, ultimate. And that's the meaning of the word ultimate in the expression exists as ultimate in its second context, in its second connotation. Sorry. Okay? And that's how he's explaining the meaning exist ultimately means exist as the object of the ultimate state of mind. Okay? That's all. That's all.
This is
the
똥이나
간담을 쓰기라 So I'm going to ask you a question, okay? Ready? emptiness itself can be described as ultimate reality. It can sometimes be nicknamed, you know, sort of the ultimate, right? When we say something exists ultimately, what are we talking about? Yeah. I said in the second interpretation. I covered you, okay? Dundam dembar yobas. Dundam dendu yobas. When you say exists as the ultimate thing, what does the word exist refer to?
Appears to the mind, receiving it, as the ultimate.
Dun tam par tsime mi ba dun tam par yu pi tsime 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 tsime
tsime
tsime tsime tsime
tsime tsime
We say, you know, exists on top of the table, okay? It is on top of the table, okay? Exists on top of the table. And then you know what we're talking about. We're talking about where it exists, okay? When you say exists as ultimate or exists ultimately, where does it exist ultimately?
In the mind. Well, no, it's a perception.
Huh? No, you do dundambar and yours. You're getting real hot. hot. You're getting closer and closer, but you're still a little bit away from it. Where does it exist? In Tibetan, yosa, the place where it is. Right? Huh? Mickey number seven on the US. That's a little weird. Come on, you guys up in front here. Let's give us a place where it is. Where does it exist ultimately? Where is it that the ultimate exists in? When you say it exists ultimately, where are you saying it exists ultimately? Don't forget the meaning of ultimate here. In the second sense of the meaning ultimate.
Well, the second is, it is, that's to be in your mind.
No, it appears to be, it exists in the object of
the city. In it, well, it's such as the
object. How about what state of mind is it that can establish that? Dongning was at the top, Shepalayus. Tony wants to top a layus. Top and wants to top and war. La Yuna, then Dampar, yes, said Dicapula. Yesterday, everybody was nodding about it when I said it. Now you don't remember what you're nodding about. Last night. That was last night.
こ
う優しさで、こう今で言ってたんだもんです。
優しさこだ、優しさ。優しさ。
優しさ。
優しさ。
なれなれ。なれ。なれなれなれ。なれ。
やっと短いよ、見たね。ねえ、ちょっと短いな。ミシージュ。
Okay. Don't forget that about what I'm asking, okay? For example, if I say, do you have some glasses? Do glasses exist in this room? You say, yeah, your glasses do exist in this room. And I say, where do they exist? Where is it that they exist? And you say, oh, they're existing on the table. Okay, there you have the distinction between what it is which is existing and where it is that that thing which exists is. Okay, so I'm trying to get at where is it that that thing that exists is. If you say, as Anton correctly identified, you know, what is it that we're talking about existing ultimately here? It is emptiness itself. Now, where is it that that emptiness exists? That's what I'm asking. Like the table, you know, where is it that the glasses are? It's on the table. Kasa, don't be nice to any kasa kala ni yore sa. Oh, you say it's on top of the table and it's on top of everything else too?
Mari, oma ni ta kasa kawa yore te, kola, turn down to you, si mung ki ta kwa, ikan lamba nene ro.
Mari, mari.
Oma ni kasa kawa yore te yore te yore. Turn down to you, si mung ki ta kwa, ikan lamba nene ro.
I can't deny that emptiness exists everywhere, okay? Everything has its own emptiness. In that sense, you're right. Don't forget, though, where we're coming from. We're coming from somebody saying about emptiness that here is something that exists ultimately. Here is something that exists as the ultimate, okay? From that point of view and from that angle, where is it that they say emptiness exists?
I want to ask you to
this. 同時歓喜とばすよね。When you ask that question, you know, what objects of emptiness are you talking about? He says, come on, get back to what the angle we're talking about. You know, you guys aren't thinking of the angle that we're talking about. When you say, it does exist as the ultimate here, in this case, in this context, in this what we've been talking about here, what we've been reading about here, what are they trying to get at? What are they talking about? They tope loy more than dam to yus. Come on, he already went through that. I said he was getting close, but he didn't get there, right? Now you're just giving me the same thing over again. That's exactly what Roy said a few minutes ago, so, you know, come on, don't go back to that, you know. Yeah, he says we can buy it that way, okay? The reason we can say that something exists as the ultimate, right, is that it exists to the ultimate state of mind. Okay? So it was really Roy, okay? So we can say that something exists in this context, in this case, something exists as ultimate. Don't forget the quotation from Arya Sangha, right? Something exists as ultimate insofar as it exists as ultimate to the ultimate state of mind. Okay? That's all. Okay? That's what Dundam Dhamma means here. That's what Dundam means here, right? Remember we went to that object of the ultimate. That was the meaning of the quotation we just went over. Okay? That was Arya Sangha's quotation, right? That's what it
is.
Fourth line from the bottom, page 55. Didn't it say, the object of the highest state of mind, okay? The object of the highest path, we said, right? That state of mind can be described as a path, because path in Tibetan or in Buddhism means state of spiritual realization. So that object, which exists to the ultimate state of mind, is what we call
The ultimate. Okay. Exist to the ultimate state of mind. Meaning, is that object which is located, Geshe-la kept saying, by the ultimate state of mind.
Okay.
Not in per se. More means to that state of mind, which presents itself to that state of mind. Okay, it's a very difficult word in Tibetan. Right. Geshe-la wants to say dun, which means object, right? He wants to say nyedun. Nyedun means the object which that state of mind establishes, or the object which that state of mind locates. Okay, is ultimate, and that's what makes it ultimate, because the word ultimate in Tibetan means the object of the highest. Okay, meaning the highest state of mind, meaning the direct perception of emptiness. Okay, that's what I mean. So, Dr. Chilton, you know, when I asked you where is emptiness, and you said everywhere, right? And I said, no, in this context, okay? When we say it exists as the ultimate object, then what are we talking about? Kurangi Kurang dundambe yures, then it dundambe yu chengi won to chain it in the shabres. Okay, you got it right. It is the object of the ultimate state of mind. But what is the object of the ultimate state of mind? What is the ultimate object?
Domini is. The absence of the
gacha. I made a mistake in translation, okay. What is the subject which holds that object?
It's the positive the other way. It's the subject which has as its object that which is
path of purification. You can say it. Namdalang is. Namdalam. Good. You know, I like it. Okay, you said the path of purity, which we know is a code word for the direct perception of emptiness. So right. You got it. Okay, then we have to say that if you describe it as the object of the path of purity, the ultimate object of the path of purity, and then you have to say path of purity meaning direct perception of emptiness, then you can describe this object as that object which is perceived by the direct perception of emptiness. I like it. So, we can summarize by saying, when people come up to you on the street and say, hey, Robert Chung, you know, where is it that the thing that is said to exist ultimately in the second interpretation of what it means to exist ultimately, where is it that ultimate exists? And, you know, because people are going to come up to you and say, where is the eyeglasses? The eyeglasses are on the table. People are going to come up to you and say, where is Geshe Duwenchen? He's sitting in his house. Okay, Robert Chilton, you know, where is it that the ultimate, in its connotation, in the second connotation, the second interpretation of it, where is it that ultimate is?
It's in the place, it's in the perception of the ultimate state of mind.
Yeshi dumping nuoris. Nuoris. Good. Because it would be a little uncomfortable if you said again, oh, it's everywhere. Emptiness is everywhere. That's it. Therefore, I want you to be sensitive to this distinction between the thing which is there and the place where the thing which is there is. Okay, so I want you to be clear on that. One refers to the object which exists. The other exists to, you know, like the place where it's sitting or something like that. We're not talking about a literal place where it's sitting now, right now, but I want you to be clear in your mind. When we say a thing exists,
You have to have clear in your mind not only the thing which is said to exist, but the locale where it is said to exist. Okay, which in this case is to the ultimate state of mind.
Okay.
So page 55, third line from the bottom, Jetsun Kaba himself uses this very useful distinction between what is there and where it is that what is there is located, where it is that what is there is located, okay? He uses that distinction very effectively here in explaining to you the literal meaning of the word dundam, dundam, because he says in the third line from the bottom, dabani, the highest, is that deep state of meditative wisdom which is immaculate, meaning direct perception of emptiness. Somebody stop. No, okay, sorry. So, ultimate, or highest, the Dhamma in Dindhamma, right? In the word ultimate. The half of it refers to that highest state of mind, meaning the deep meditative wisdom, which is immaculate, meaning the direct perception of emptiness, okay? And to be that thing's object, that Dhamma's Din, right, is what it is to be, and then it says the word object, Yul, okay, is what it means to be the ultimate object, or you could say ultimate. Okay, in Tibetan it's that object, dun, is the object of the ultimate state of is the object of the highest state of mind, dhamma. So we can call it dhampe dun, meaning dun dham, which is the Tibetan word for ultimate. Okay, so that's how it's coming here. Okay. Okay. So, last line of page 55. Having described what it is that is ultimate, having described what the word ultimate means, hey, can we put our finger now and say, hey, this is what they're talking about? Last line, page 55. Yeah, we'll tell you what we're talking about. Dog may be done. Okay? Emptiness itself. That thing which is the absence of a self nature. Okay? That thing which is the very nature of things, that thing which is the absence of a self-nature, that thing which is the ultimate object of the path of purity. Now they've used that code word for direct perception of emptiness. That thing which is the object of the path of purity, that emptiness, oh, that's what we're talking about. In the second interpretation of the expression to exist as the ultimate, okay, or ultimately, is what ultimate means here. Laying it. And by the way, I forgot to translate one thing. He said, by the way, path of purity is again specifying the locale, okay? Meaning it's ultimate in that it is the ultimate thing to the path of purity, right? And that was his last phrase on page 55. So that's again, he said, Geshe-la said, pointing out the locale. Now he goes on to page 56, first line. In the Tibetan it says, Dhirni. This is a special grammar particle in Tibetan, which means, now what could be that thing? Okay, Dhirni means what could be that thing? Well, I'll tell you what. It could not nothing. It's not the other two kinds of a nature. Okay, it's not the other two kinds of nature. Meaning what? We're not talking about Shenwangs and Kuntangs. Okay, What could be that ultimate thing? What could exist as the ultimate? What could be ultimate reality? Well, I'll start out by saying, I'll tell you something that could not be that thing, and that's dependent things and constructs. Two of the attributes of the mind-only school. Oh, key, but, rather, it can only be one thing. Jipu means it can only be one thing and one thing alone, and that's totality. Okay, that's emptiness in the mind-only school. And that's what it can be. That's what the text is saying, says Jetsun Kappa. Yinba, which means to be. In English you say is for both. It is on the table means it exists on the table. It is this or it is not this is referring to a different kind of isness, which is it is that thing or it is not that thing. And throughout this section, when they keep saying you, meaning it exists as ultimate, it exists as ultimate, it exists ultimately, they're saying it is the ultimate. And that's, I think, where Dr. Tilton was having some, you know, we had a question about it. We were talking. Just when you say this exists ultimately, what you are saying in this second interpretation is that it exists as something ultimate. And in effect, what you're saying is it is the ultimate. You see what I mean? So then you get the distinction in the Tibetan between the word exists and the word is. Okay, so we go from exists ultimately to exists as the ultimate to it is ultimate reality. Okay, it is the ultimate. Okay, and that's the second sense of ultimate here. Okay, you have to think of it that way, as a verb of identification, and not so much as a verb of existence. Okay, that's what I mean. No, sir. We're going to go on tomorrow to the second line here, where Master Sangha's, I'm sorry, Maitreya's text. Dividing the middle from the extremes is going to go on. He's going to be quoting it as proof for his statement that out of the three attributes of the mind-only school, it is only totality or emptiness which can be described in this manner, in the second interpretation. Okay. Sangye shindu mikte vage Roku nam dhashima cha pasho Idam guru rana mingla kam nirya dhyani Dihi ke wokun sanam yeshe cha zokshi Sanam yeshe le chumhe Dhamma kunyi thubha shum.